You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Live from Chicken Town, this is the Flopcast, episode 599.
On Flopcast.net.
Yes, hello, Kevin.
Hello, Kevin.
It's the Kevin and Kevin show tonight. No Cornflake tonight. Cornflake could not be here this week, but yeah, we're going to have her back if all things go according to plan for our big episode 600 next week. But filling in special guest co-host tonight is Kevin Cafferty. Welcome back, Kevin.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here in Chicken Town tonight, although I am a little sad that we are cornflakeless.
Yeah, definitely. We miss Cornflake. But yeah, great to have you back on. No, you're even when you're not here, your name comes up from time to time around here. Certainly in all our Dragon Con coverage, we kept bringing you up because you and I were running around doing goofy things all weekend. But Flopcast listeners have heard Kevin a couple times before, but it's been too long. Good to have you back. And the subject tonight is something that we had planned a long time ago. We said we have to have you back to talk about the Lincoln Mall.
The Lincoln Mall, Lincoln, Rhode Island, and honestly, like Northern Rhode Island, I think, first and greatest shopping center.
So yeah, this is going to be just a lot of mall talk tonight, because we grew up in the same general area, that being Northern Rhode Island / Southern Massachusetts, the Woonsocket, Rhode Island area. And yeah, Lincoln Mall, that was our local mall, just south of Woonsocket in Lincoln, Rhode Island, just down Route 146.
Yes. And yeah. I would note to the listeners who aren't from Rhode Island, for people from the Rhode Island area, any drive longer than 15 minutes is a problem. And when Lincoln Mall opened, there were nicer malls in Warwick, but yes. Warwick was about 20 minutes away.
That's way too far.
And so Lincoln Mall had nothing to worry about in the early days.
So this is going to be a super specific recollections of a very particular area and a very specific mall. People who are not from the Northern Rhode Island area, you have no reason to know anything about the Lincoln Mall, but I think everybody will be able to relate because everybody has a mall of their youth like this somewhere out there.
Yeah, my hope is that like Taylor Swift songs, that by honing in on the specific, we will reach the universal.
Yeah, we're going to be just like Taylor tonight.
This is Taylor's version of the Flopcast.
This show is going to start selling out football stadiums if we continue this kind of subject. I was just thinking about that drive down Route 146, though, because you get on the highway, you leave Woonsocket, you're heading towards Providence. But before you get anywhere near Providence, of course, you hit Lincoln. But along the way, you go by the rustic drive-in theater. You go by the building shaped like a giant milk bottle.
Oh, that's a good building. What was the place that sold nuts?
Oh, yeah. Right before you leave Woonsocket was the Nut Factory.
Yes, the Nut Factory.
The Nut Factory, right before you get on the highway.
you get your nuts.
Little store that sold nuts.
You get a giant bottle of milk.
Yes.
And then you head to the Lincoln Mall.
I also remembered along the way, there was a motel, like an old-fashioned, like, I don't know, like 1950s style, stupid little scruffy, cheapo motel. But well into the 90s, if not later, on their sign out front, they boasted that they had color TV.
Well,
I was impressed.
I think that they were probably overselling the TV.
I think they were lying. I think there was a little black and white set
with like a color overlay of red.
I think it was a trick. But yeah, eventually we would get down to the Lincoln Mall, yeah, which was super close to Woonsocket, closer than I even realized at the time. It felt farther away to me, certainly when I was a little kid It really felt like we were going somewhere.
Yeah, I would come sort of from a different direction in a town called Smithfield.
Okay.
And we would go past a place called Ron's Spaghetti House, which as a kid was very notable to me because it had a photo of Andre the Giant dining there.
Wow. So
that was exciting.
That's very exciting.
So we wouldn't have to get on the highway. And there were times where I would, you know, it was a long trek, but I would ride my bike to Lincoln Mall.
Oh, wow. That's hardcore. So you had some secret back roads route that I'm not even aware of to get to the mall. And somewhere along the way, Andre the Giant once ate, I'm assuming, a lot of spaghetti.
He put it away. I think they still were out of spaghetti around Spaghetti House because of Andre's visit.
Andre ate all the spaghetti in the state of Rhode Island.
But to me, there are like, you know, other than the three ages of man, there's like the three ages of Lincoln Mall. There's going there with your parents as a young kid.
Yeah.
There's getting dropped off by your parents and yes. then picked up at a predetermined time. And then when you're a little older, you drive there yourself.
Yeah. And I feel like I did very little of going there myself. Like by the time my goofy friends and I were driving, we were kind of fading away from the mall scene. But yeah, that's a good point, though. I definitely could divide my mall time into those three eras.
Well, luckily, I didn't go there socially very much. I was lucky that when I was driving, I worked at the Lincoln Mall.
I also worked at the Lincoln Mall.
Well, where were you employed?
Well, let me ask you first, how long did you work there?
Probably a couple years, I'd say.
Okay, that you worked there a bit longer than me. I worked there for one day.
One fantastic day.
Best day of my life. Hang on. No, it might have been the worst day of my life. I hated it so much that I quit immediately. No, there was a restaurant called the Magic Menu.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of a generic little lunch sort of a restaurant, you know, sandwiches and tacos and soup and junk. And my sister worked there for a little while, waitressing, I believe. And so then I got in to get a dishwashing job. So, and I was, I don't know, 16, and I was, okay, I'll go try having a dishwashing job. And yeah, I worked with the a kid there who was currently a dishwasher, training me, showing me how to do the job. And I just hated it. It was disgusting and horrible. And I just wanted out. So yeah, my entire mall work experience was one day dishwashing at the Magic Menu. And I received a check for like $15.
How did you tell them on the day, or did you go home, call and say, I'm out, or did you just not show up again?
Same day, end of the shift. I told the guy that, that I was quitting.
This is not for me. I don't know what this says about me, Kevin, but I worked as a dishwasher at Magic Menu.
Wow. No. And
stayed there for 2 years.
You were at the Magic Menu?
At the Magic Menu with the frozen yogurt and everything.
This is folks, we did not discuss this in advance.
This is a bombshell. We're blowing this podcast wide open.
There's going to come a day when we realize that we're just the same person.
This is weirder than the time when we were at the Mexican restaurant waiting to go see Mystery Science Theater 3000 and realized we had gone to the same high school.
The parallels are eerie and they just keep piling up. This might be the freakiest one yet. Okay, we both washed dishes at the Magic Menu, but you lasted a lot longer than me.
Yeah, man. I and there's so many things about the people who owned the Magic Menu that I Ooh. Want to say on this show, but I'm afraid that legally I cannot. So I'm going to wait until we're done recording for that.
Ooh, okay.
But
for you Patreon subscribers.
I felt like that was what I liked about that job is they would let me, I was the dishwasher, so I controlled the radio in the back, much to the consternation of every line cook in that building, because they wanted to hear Led Zeppelin. And I was either listening to WBRU, which was the alternative rock music station
yes.
in town, or I was playing like the soundtrack to Les Miserables, because I was that kid.
What a dramatic kitchen soundtrack that would have been. Wow.
Oh, and you know, I would chat with the waitresses. I played Talking Heads tapes. It was, I'm not gonna say it was a good job, but it was a job, and I was adequate enough at it that I was there for a fair amount of time. I quit when I went to college.
You know, if I'd stuck it out, I probably could have settled in and had a pleasant enough work experience. I think that the kid that was training me was really presenting just the very worst aspects of the job and really just pushing it as being horrible.
Yeah, I don't know if he was like trying to build himself up. Like, this is a really tough job and you really need to dig in to do it. Or because I do not have memories of that job being particularly difficult. I remember listening to the music. I remember there was like a mopping aspect that I never really did.
I seem to recall someone telling me, oh, that kid, he makes it a lot more difficult than it needs to be.
I remember the secret ingredient in the tuna salad was French dressing. So there's a little bombshell for the listeners. And I don't know, it was fine. And later on, there was a fanzine called Dishwasher done by a guy called Dishwasher Pete Pete. I was able to read it and get all the references.
I used to correspond with Dishwasher Pete. We used to trade our little small press publications of the 90s. I remember Pete. Good guy.
See, if he had known about your one day ham and egg in it at Magic Menu, I don't know if he would have sent you that stuff.
We would have bonded as brothers at that point. Yeah, I don't recall if I ever mentioned my one day in the dishwashing business to Dishwasher Pete.
I do think it's worth pointing out, one of the things that I think separates 70s malls like Lincoln Mall from malls that came later is that Lincoln Mall did not have a food court.
No, it did not. Lincoln Mall was tiny, as malls go.
It was tiny, and yet a 35-store mall still managed to house two Papa Gino's pizzerias.
Were there two? I don't remember that part.
There were two.
That sounds vaguely familiar now that you mention it.
There was a Papa Gino's like in the center part of the mall, which was open until about it was open until COVID, I think.
Oh, wow.
I think the COVID shutdowns finally did it in. But I went there in like 2018 or 2019 with some friends, and it was preserved in amber. It was the exact same Papa Gino's I would go to as an adolescent.
Yeah.
And it was magical. Even the jukebox was there, which only played singles and had like, you know, the A side and the B side.
But there was a second Papa Gino's elsewhere in the mall.
There was a second Papa Gino's. And the thing I heard in my extensive research for this episode of this podcast is they opened the second Papa Gino's because it was next to Dream Machine. And Dream Machine, the video arcade at Lincoln Mall, was the real crown jewel of this mall.
Absolutely. That's amazing. I totally forgot that there were two Papa Gino's. Papa Gino's is a New England chain of a pizza place. Big, thin, floppy Italian-style pizza slices, which I loved as a kid. I devoured many, many Papa Gino's slices in my time.
Yeah, the pizza was not great, but it was cheap.
Yeah.
And the jukebox in the one in the center most notably had the single for I'm Too Sexy by Right Said Fred.
Ooh.
And the B-side of that was I'm Too Sexy in Spanish. And so we got a lot of mileage out of playing that 17 or 18 times.
Yeah, you should have gotten a hold of that single so you could crank it in the back of the Magic Menu.
Oh, I don't think the Magic Menu could have handled that amount of sexy. They were selling frozen yogurt.
So Lincoln Mall, it was just a single story. There was no second floor, no second level on it. And it was essentially like two long hallways with a couple of little shorter hallways off of that. And that was about it.
Yeah, there were, I think it had like a brief heyday throughout the 80s. In 1989, a mall called Emerald Square opened in North Attleboro.
Oh, yeah.
That was the first sort of blow against it. And then the Providence Place Mall opened, I think, in the late 90s. Because I went to Providence Place on the day I went to the opening where like Mayor Cianci spoke and everything.
Mayor Cianci.
I was living in Providence and my roommate, Mike, who I do a podcast with now, and I walked to the Providence Place Mall because let's see what this is.
Mayor Cianci, for people outside Rhode Island, with mayor of Providence and then went to prison and then was reelected mayor of Providence when he got out.
Yes, and that's sort of like the least weird thing about him, too.
Yes. Also,
he had his own line of marinara sauce.
Yes, sold his own spaghetti sauce. Andre the Giant, I'm sure, was a huge fan of the mayor's marinara sauce.
But we're not here to talk about Mayor Cianci. We're here to talk about the Lincoln Mall. And I feel like my heyday at the Lincoln Mall, not counting all of the money I made cleaning the dishes of the Magic Menu and not mopping the floor, was really that first taste of adolescent freedom when your parents drop you off and you meet your friends there and you spend like a Saturday afternoon or a Friday night just walking up and down these two corridors of this one-story mall.
Just back and forth and back and forth.
And sometimes, you'd go to Papageno's because that was the cheap place to eat. If you were feeling extra fancy, you'd maybe hit like Newport Creamery, which was also in there.
Right. I was trying to remember. I thought there was the Newport Creamery was there, which is sort of a Friendly's style place. They had like lunch food plus ice cream and stuff.
Yeah. Cheeseburgers and ice cream. Yeah. We never went to the Roast House.
Nobody ever went to the Roast House. I never went in
because
there.
That was far too fancy.
Yeah. Like a roast beef restaurant. And yeah, I never went in there either.
No, no child went to the Roast House willingly. You could not get a clown sundae at the Roast House.
Yeah. Now, as far as restaurants, is that it? Have we named them all? Because I can't think of any other ones.
No, I think Papageno's, Newport Creamery, Roast House, Magic Menu.
And Papageno's again.
Unless you count Hickory Farms.
There was the Hickory Farms, yeah, which was the store that sells sausages and cheeses and little gift boxes of sausage and cheese.
But yeah, those were your food options.
I think we've knocked off the whole list of restaurants at Lincoln Mall. Yeah, Hickory Farms.
Hickory Farms.
They always had the free samples out. There'd be like a tray
of crackers.
Grab little hunks of sausage.
Yeah, with some disgusting jam on it. And you're like, well, I'll pop this in my mouth.
Yeah, we'd just swing through and eat that stuff. And now it just freaks me out just thinking about it. Just little weird chunks of food just loose in Rhode Island.
What sanitary measures were being taken at the Hickory Farms? And I feel like it was sort of this weird kind of social. There was a sort of a social like CNBC scene aspect. There was also kind of like a weird mating ritual aspect to it.
At the Hickory Farms specifically?
At Hickory Farms specifically. But no, I think when you're at Lincoln Mall as an adolescent, it's sort of like that's where you kind of would meet kids from other towns. I mean, the people I know from that time in my life are sort of the people I still know. I mentioned my old roommate, Mike, who I do a podcast with.
Yes.
I first got to know him Friday nights at the Lincoln Mall because we were both wearing like REM t-shirts. I think my first like in name only girlfriend was someone I met at Lincoln Mall.
Wow. I never met anybody at Lincoln Mall.
Really?
Yeah. I'm not really someone who meets people.
What did you do there?
I just head down. Don't make eye contact.
You went once to this Magic Menu and we're like, I can't mall here anymore. Were you like that every time you went to Lincoln Mall?
Every time. I was the worst.
Get me out of this place. Oh, I remember one time I was at Lincoln Mall and I was with a couple of my friends. It helped that I have this one friend named Tim who is like almost comically good looking. Like there's a rockabilly song called Handsome Tim about how good looking he is. Oh, who, wow. Like when you're an awkward adolescent is like the best person to be like one of your closest friends in sure. terms of self-esteem. But so we'd meet a lot of girls because of that.
Wow.
I think. I remember one time we were talking to these girls. They seemed interesting. And then midway through the conversation, they asked Tim and I if we would join their car stereo theft ring. It was sort of like, well, I'll be the lookout. And you just got to go. You just got to check every door and see if it's open. And then you grab the stereo and you have a bag and we'll be. And I was like, I'm not joining your crime syndicate. I don't care how cute you are.
You know, going in, I was pretty sure you would have way better Lincoln Mall stories than me. And I am not disappointed. That is crazy.
It's crazy. You meet girls and suddenly they're asking you to go down a really dark path.
Wow.
There's an alternate reality where I agreed to do that. And, who knows what sort of hardship endured.
Yeah.
And then several years later at the Lincoln Mall, my car stereo was broken. Was it by these same people?
I think we can safely assume, yes, it absolutely was.
Oh, I also wanted to mention the movie theater at Lincoln Mall, which was a 4-screen movie theater.
Yeah.
It seemed to get weird exclusives that wouldn't be playing at the other theaters nearby.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd like have to go to the Lincoln Mall. And especially like one thing I noticed with like my friends and I was that the movie theater, especially like when you started dating girls, was where a lot of the action would happen was in the Lincoln Mall movie theater.
More action at the movie theater than even at Magic Menu.
Yes, that place was like the Blue Lagoon, Kevin.
Yes, that's right.
So many discoveries.
The movie theater, I know I went to that movie theater at the mall many times, and yet I can barely remember any specific movies. I know in the 90s, I believe we went there to see Federal Hill, that movie that was made, you know, shot in Providence.
Yeah, Michael Corrente directed it.
Yeah. It was like about kind of low-level gangster type dudes.
Yes.
In Providence.
It was a big deal because he was like a Rhode Island guy and he shot this movie in Providence.
Yes, it was a very big deal. I believe we went to see Federal Hill at the Lincoln Mall. The only other specific memory I have of that movie theater is I was supposed to meet a girl to see a movie there. So I'm there and she did not show up. I could not find her. I was walking all over the whole mall. Maybe she went to the wrong Papageno's. You know, I was circling around, could not find the girl. Then eventually, like, it was time for the movies to start. We're a few minutes into the movie. I bought a ticket and went in thinking maybe she thought we were going to meet inside the movie theater at the actual movie while it's running. So I went in there and just kind of, you know, walked up and down the aisle in the dark. Nope, she's not in here. And this is, of course, everything's pre-cell phone. And it's just, if you miss somebody, if plans change or whatever, you're just, you know, out of luck. No way to make contact. So I was just stood up and didn't know what happened. And it was just something stupid. She couldn't get a ride or something happened with her family or whatever. But I do remember, though, the movie that we were supposed to see was The Money Pit.
Oh, and that was probably the saddest viewing of The Money Pit you ever endured.
To this day, I've never seen The Money Pit other than the minute or so that I saw when I was walking through the theater looking for the girl.
Too many bad memories associated with that movie.
A lot of bad memories of Tom Hanks and Shelley Long.
I saw a lot of movies there, but it's hard for me to distinguish which ones. I remember, for some reason, the Corey Haim, Corey Feldman vehicle License to Drive sticks out in my head.
Sure. That seems like a perfect mall movie. Anything with a Corey in it is solid to see at a mall.
You know, this is a little on brand, but I remember seeing Gleaming the Cube, the Christian Slater skateboarding movie there.
You're just trying to wedge in a plug for your podcast.
Exactly. And I remember we all had big problems with it because it was not representing the subculture as well as it could have been. Mm-hmm. But it was, I remember the last movie I saw there, I think, was Good Will Hunting.
Oh, okay. So that's what, 97, I think?
That was the late 90s.
Yeah.
Sort of the last hurrah of the Lincoln Mall of old.
Yeah, because you hinted that the mall is still there. It's just kind of like there's a little piece of the middle part is still there, and then they've kind of built a strip mall that's sort of attached to it.
Yeah, it's kind of like a cyborg now where...
Yeah, it's very weird.
There's a center that still looks exactly like the old Lincoln Mall, and actually like the exterior of the Papageno's is still there. But there's a much fancier movie theater that they've added, and there's sort of a bowling alley arcade, which is not as good as Dream Machine.
Yeah.
Dream Machine was the place where you really wanted to have your birthday party with the unlimited tokens. But that's there, and there's like a Stop and Shop and a Target and a bunch of sort of exterior-facing big box stores.
None of these stores. They've sort of built a shopping center kind of area with these big modern stores that's just sort of attached to the remaining zombie remains of what once was a mall.
It's like they put it on life support and added all these superfluous limbs, and they did nothing to kind of make it look congruent. So like some of the exterior of the building looks like this old mall, some of it looks like a Target. It's very ugly.
It's bizarre.
I think people go there.
Is the fountain still there in the middle?
Yeah, but it's empty.
They don't bother running the water anymore.
No water flows in that fountain.
That's great. Yeah, there's a huge fountain right in the middle. And so now it just sits there empty. That's very sad.
Yeah, because I went to that movie theater somewhere. I went there this summer because my parents still live close to it.
Yeah.
I took my kids to see the Blue Beetle movie there.
Oh, that's very recent.
Which they all enjoyed.
Uh-huh. I have not seen Blue Beetle yet, even though I'm a DC guy. I'm several DC movies behind.
I guess what I will say about Blue Beetle, I know this is like not normal Flopcast behavior to talk about recent movies, but it's because it's like super formulaic.
Yeah.
My kids are young and they don't know the formula, so it worked really well for them.
Okay.
So the superhero origin stuff, they're like, oh, well, you know, he's figuring out how the suit works.
Right.
Like they'd never seen Greatest American Hero. So they don't know about getting an alien piece of technology that doesn't always do what you want it to.
Yeah.
So for them, it was great. I thought it was fine. There's a few other Lincoln Mall stores I do want to shout out.
Absolutely. We want to hit everything.
I really need to hit Music and the and has an ellipsis after it. So it's Music and ... which was the record and tape store.
I don't remember Music and. Was that sort of a later edition, like 90s, late 80s, 90s?
It was definitely late 80s. Okay. I don't know if it predated.
Yeah, because I was trying to think earlier. I was like, I could not remember there being a record store there. So I think like when I was a kid, like 70s and through most of the 80s, I don't think they had a record store of any kind.
Oh, well, Music And was great. And also, I do have to like say that the staff there were so nice and encouraging. And I remember going there and, you know, I'd buy like an REM cassette and they sort of would suggest other things like, oh, if you like them, check out Husker Du, or, you know, if you like the Dead Kennedys, check out the Misfits. And like they were, you know, because they were like cool older kids.
Yeah, they sound way too cool to be at a mall.
But they were also like really nice to kind of 12-year-old dorky me who was, you're going to find this hard to believe, Kevin, but I was not always the paragon of cool who is currently guesting on this podcast. And I found out late, like I met people like later on who I don't necessarily remember them working at Music And, but who did work there. My friend Keith Darcy worked there. My friend Matt Iannotti, who lives in Japan now, worked at Music And. Mm. And I thought like cool record store people were all going to be that as I went through life. And I was in for a rude awakening.
Yeah.
When I got a little older and started hitting the Providence cool record stores. Because with the notable exception of Ron and Judy at Fast Forward, the people at the Providence record stores could not have been bigger.
I remember going to those Providence stores. And yeah, there can be some attitude, certainly, at the indie record stores.
Nothing you bought was cool enough at those Providence indie record stores.
I mean, when I was a kid, I was buying most of my music was coming from the Caldor department store in Woonsocket. Not even the Caldor at the Lincoln Mall, which did have a Caldor, but I was going to the Caldor in Woonsocket. And then there was a little record store right next to Caldor in Woonsocket, right? Sounds Abound.
Oh,
Yeah.
I didn't know Sounds Abound. I remember Caldor. I didn't go to the Caldor in the Woon. I would go to the Lincoln Mall.
Okay. One. Yeah. Caldor in Woonsocket. I bought all my music there or Sounds Abound, which was right next door.
And, you know, sometimes if there was a sale at Caldor, I remember buying Polka Party by Weird Al at Caldor.
Yep.
I remember buying Pool It by the Monkees at Caldor.
Oh, Pool It. Yes. The Monkees 1987 album. A classic.
It had a big display at Caldor.
Oh, man. A giant display featuring the Monkees in their 40s topless in a pool.
Yeah.
Outstanding.
This is what you could get at Lincoln Mall. So I did want to shout out a Music And, which I guess came after you.
I think it did.
Did you have Spencer Gifts when you were
Absolutely.
There?
Spencer Gifts was always there. Yes.
Okay.
If you need a coffee mug with breasts, get in there, man. Go to Spencer Gifts.
A t-shirt with Richard Nixon on it saying he's tan, rested, and ready. And if you're a fan of comedy, that was the place to go.
But I remember like girls being into stickers. Like girls would have albums that they would put just little stickers of unicorns and you know, little cute stickers. And then that's what I remember happening at Spencer Gifts. It was the girls buying stickers.
I think there was a lot of that. I think my friend Noah Hayslip once said that there are like three types of girls. There's like horse girls, sticker girls, and miscellaneous or something. And the sticker girls would go to Spencer Gifts.
But Spencer Gifts, I believe, continues to this day, but they've gone a little more hardcore. Like now it's like a sex shop practically.
Yeah, because I live near the Burlington Mall.
Yeah.
And there's a Spencer Gifts there. And I was looking for back to school backpacks. I was there with my kids. And I was like, oh, there's backpacks in there. And we walked into Spencer Gifts and I had to immediately turn everyone around and be like,
yeah,
we need to get out of this store immediately. Was Walden Books there when you were?
Walden Books, absolutely. That was my bookstore as a kid. That was the only bookstore that I had frequent access to. I spent a lot of time at that Walden Books at the Lincoln Mall.
It was fantastic. You could get your Dungeons and Dragons tomes there.
Yep.
They had a spinner rack of comic books, which is that's one of the first places where, as like a budding comic book fan, I would buy comics.
Absolutely. That spinner rack, I remember very well. What was special about that, though, for me at the time, certainly, and I'm talking like 1983, 84, there were comics there that you could not get at regular stores, like newsstand stores. Like, they were getting the comics that were only available in comic book shops, you know, the direct market stuff. Yeah, there were comics there that I had never seen because Walden Books got them through those other channels that the newsstands didn't.
Oh, nice. I would buy my Bloom County collections there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The comic strip collections. That spinner rack, I remember like seeing like DC comics that were only sold to the comic shops, like stuff like Infinity Inc. and weird stuff like Thriller, Nathaniel Dusk, New Talent Showcase, these weird direct market comics. And they were in terrible condition also. Like, the same comics would be on that rack for months and months, and everybody would just paw through them and bend them in half, you know, as they're flipping through to see what's in the back. So there were dreadfully battered and beaten comics there, but stuff that I'd never seen before.
They'd be like, this isn't Batman.
Yeah.
I was a Marvel kid, so I was noticing like Strike Force, Moratori, or whatever.
Right. We Who Are About to Die. I remember them.
I also remember Walden Books was the first place I ever encountered graphic novel collections. I remember seeing like Batman, The Dark Knight Returns and Watchmen collected there and thinking that was the coolest thing.
That was a big deal that those collections were in bookstores. That was a big deal for DC Comics. Yeah, but yeah, the comic strip collections, you know, getting Farside and Calvin and Hobbes, even the old Garfield collections and all that. That was, I would just be like a beeline to the humor section whenever I went into Walden Books, and I would just study every book, all the goofy joke books and comics collections, the B. Kleban cat books, all that stuff.
Where did Blanche not get them all? The woman knew a tasteless joke.
Oh, the tasteless joke books.
Oh, I'd read so many tasteless jokes at Walden Books.
I never bought a tasteless joke book, but yeah, like the kids in the schoolyard at junior high had them. And yeah, I would see them there at the store.
You would peruse them. In the back was the kind of sci-fi fantasy section.
Yeah.
Where you'd get like your Piers Anthony books.
I bought the paperbacks of Hobbit and Lord of the Rings and Silmarillion and all that stuff. All those paperbacks I bought at that Walden Books. Still have them.
Oh, awesome. I only read like trashy stuff like Dragonlance.
Yeah.
Or Incarnations of Immortality. Or like Alan Dean Foster books.
They had it all.
Oh, it was great for that.
Remember that freaky pet store?
Yes, Rumford Pet Center.
Oh, see, I didn't know the name of it. I just remember that like right in the middle, freaky pet store.
There was the Rumford Pet Center. You could look at the fish.
Yep.
You know, they didn't really have dogs and cats there, but they had fish and they had
tarantula,
various rodents and snakes and spiders.
I would be freaked out by the tarantula.
We would go there so often that we like became like on a first name basis with like the dude who worked there. And I remember when Rumford Pet Center closed, we're like, oh, we're never going to see this guy again. And then he got a job at the CVS.
Oh, perfect.
In the Lincoln Mall. So everything, it was a Lincoln Mall miracle.
Yes. Meanwhile, all the gerbils and guinea pigs were just set loose roaming the streets of Lincoln.
Yes. Was KB Toys there when you were there?
Yes. Okay. KB Toys, that's kind of a mall classic. Every mall had a KB Toys.
I got to say, KB Toys is a marvel of efficiency in terms of packing as many toys as you can into the tiniest space.
Oh, yeah. It was a tiny store packed with junk.
Yes, it was like
mostly junk.
It was like the stateroom scene in A Night at the Opera, where you're just in there with the junk and trying to find the toy you need, which I think was why Toys R Us opening seemed like such a big deal, because suddenly, you know, you could stretch your arms out all the way in either direction in Toys R Us.
Yeah. Now, did I have to ask again, did Lincoln Mall have a Toys R Us at some point?
No, the Toys R Us was in Warwick, so that required a special trip.
Another case of, the bigger good malls had the better toy store. Yeah, KB, I would walk into KB once in a while, KB Toys, and then I would just think, what am I doing in here? And then I turn around and walk out.
I would go, I had a habit of going in and just looking at which action figures of comic book characters I was interested in had come out.
Yeah.
And just kind of looking at them going, hmm, and then leaving.
My toy store was Child World in Woonsocket.
Oh, that was a
huge
hell of a toy store.
That was a massive store.
Now, here's one I know you're not going to remember because it opened in like the early 90s, but it was a big deal to me. Yeah. And you're going to know other locations of this store. Across from Magic Menu at a certain point, a satellite of Starship Excalibur opened.
Yes, I do remember when that happened. Starship Excalibur, that was the first comic book shop I ever set foot in, was the original Starship Excalibur in downtown Providence.
That wasn't the first one I went to, but it was the second. The first one I went to was called Iron Horse Comics and Collectibles, which was on Hope Street in Rhode Island.
I don't know that one.
Like, you know, Marvel Comics would list like five comic book shops in every month. And the first one to show up in Rhode Island was Iron Horse. And I was like, we have to go there. And so I think I convinced my aunt to take me. And then I found out about Starship Excalibur in downtown Providence. And I remember my dad wanted to take my brother and I to see the Providence College Friars basketball team play.
Yeah.
And I agreed to go thinking I could talk him into going to Starship Excalibur after. And it was a much longer walk than my father had anticipated. Yeah. So he was not pleased.
I think my first time going there was also my dad drove me down there. That, you know, middle of downtown Providence, there's nowhere to park. And I just had to, like, he pulled over. I jumped out of the car. So my first time going inside that store, like, the clock is ticking. You know, I just had to run in, I was probably in there for like a minute, and I just had to get back out.
Like you were on supermarket sweep.
Yeah, essentially. Yes. But then, yeah, my friends and I, that turned into like once a month, take the bus from Woonsocket down to Providence and go to Starship Excalibur. That became a regular thing for us. But yeah, I do remember one day going into the mall and seeing, look at that, they opened a Starship Excalibur in here. And then at some point it changed to another shop. It changed to, or at least the name changed to Solar Wind.
Yeah, and then it started selling, I think, like wizards and wizard crystals and stuff.
Perfect.
pewter dragon statues. Because I think Starship Excalibur opened up there during the real boom times. Mm-hmm. Of kind of those like X-Force number one and the Jim Lee X-Men number one, where comics are just selling millions of copies.
Yes.
And I think it probably lasted through the death of Superman. And then people suddenly realized, like, I have 750 copies of the death of Superman and no one wants to buy them.
Yeah. The comic book industry was booming in the early 90s. And then there was the crash of the mid 90s. Not all mall stores would survive that crash.
Jesus. And no discussion, I think, of the Lincoln Mall is complete without a shout out to Chess King.
There was a Chess King. Yeah. And all those clothing stores meant nothing to me. I remember just walking past a million clothing stores, and that was one of them.
It was. I mean, that sort of had like a very specific look to it, which was not what I was about. But you knew when someone had, like, their parents took them to Chess King. They were decked out in these Z Cavaricci parachute MC Hammer pants.
Nice. I remember a shop called Deb. There was a clothing store called Deb, which I had that shiny silver walls on the outside of it. So that one would kind of stand out to me.
Yeah. My younger sister worked at Cherry and Webb, like, all through college. My older brother worked at the Foot Locker. It was a real family affair at the Lincoln Mall.
Oh, another weird one. What about that store? I think it was sort of near the middle that sold organs.
Yes. And people would play the organ while you walked past.
Like big fancy organs, and there's organ music playing. What in the world was that about? How is that a sustainable business model for a mall?
Well, I don't think it was, because that left very soon.
It was there for a long time, as I recall.
One of my favorite things about Lincoln Mall is that when a store would close, they would, you know, kind of board it up and put a large sign in front of it that said, Lincoln Mall is on the grow.
Which, we were like, I beg to differ.
Yes, which all evidence appears to be to the contrary here, but you keep telling yourself that. Lincoln Mall. I especially liked when, like, in the latter days of Lincoln Mall, I think when rent got cheap, when it sort of became, it wasn't even local chains. It was sort of like, you know, you got your friend Doug and we're like, we're going to sell pipes. We're going to sell corn cob pipes. And someone would open a corn cob pipe shop with a lot of fanfare and it would close 2 months later.
Wow. I was long gone by the time that was happening.
Or, you know, we're gonna sell healing crystals and Terry Moore's Strangers in Paradise trade paperbacks. And, you know, that would open for about a few months. And then it.
Sure. That was Solar Wind.
Yes.
Outstanding. There was a Radio Shack there for a long, long time.
There was. I bought many $10 Walkman at that Radio Shack.
Absolutely.
That did not work.
Yeah. Again, there was a Radio Shack in Woonsocket right next to the Child World. So that's where I did most of my Radio Shack business.
And, you know, the anchor stores, we had mentioned Caldor. Yeah. I think the other one for a while was Woolco, and then it was replaced by Zaire, and then it was replaced by Ames.
Yes. Yeah, so many dead local department store chains.
My friend Liam, if you ever go to shirtgeeks.com, does a swift business in sort of like making t-shirts of all these.
Oh, cool. Yeah. All the
defunct
old
stores. Like he'll make Zaire and Caldor and Child World t-shirts and Almax.
Oh, okay. I suddenly feel like I kind of need all those shirts.
I know there was an Almax that you could kind of walk across the parking lot to, which I would do because a dude I knew from the computer bulletin board scene worked at the deli at the Almax, a guy who's, whose handle was Backslash. You know, I was in like eighth or ninth grade and he was in college. So I felt very sophisticated having college friends like Backslash who worked at the deli at the Lincoln Mall.
That's outstanding. The Almax was my primary grocery store of my youth, but not that specific Almax. Almax was a pretty big chain in the northern Rhode Island area, I think.
I remember at one point Backslash was trying to convince me that he was under investigation by the FBI for owning a tactical backpack nuclear device. So I'm not sure how much truth there was to that story. But
that is not uncommon among deli workers, though, I think.
But at the time, it seemed plausible.
That's bizarre. I think, you know, we've been circling around this one a couple of times, but we've got to give some time to Dream Machine.
Yes. Man, what a great arcade.
This was the video game arcade of the Lincoln Mall Dream Machine. And again, Lincoln Mall, like everything was a little off compared to the other malls because all the other malls seem to have like Aladdin's Castle was the big mall arcade chain. But Lincoln Mall kind of went their own way with Dream Machine, which I don't know if that was a chain or was that the only one? I don't know.
If it was a chain, it was not a chain that had any other location I've ever heard of in my life.
Yeah. And it was early into the video arcade market because that arcade was there before I even really knew what arcades were. I remember that being there when I was a little kid. It just looked like this dark, scary, weird thing that my parents and I would not go in.
I remember Dream Machine like really getting the marquee games early too. Like I remember when Dragon's Lair showed up at Dream Machine.
Yeah.
That was an event.
The introduction of Dragon's Lair was very exciting and then very disappointing.
Exactly.
Because, man, that was awful to try to actually play. It's you're watching a beautiful Don Bluth cartoon while feeding way too much money into it.
But holy cow, did it look cool. And Dream Machine was on two levels. It had a lot of mirrors.
Yes.
I feel like the only approximation of Dream Machine I've ever come across in my life is the classic arcade level at Fun Spot in New Hampshire.
Oh, wow.
Has like the sights and sounds. It takes me back to Dream Machine where you're just hearing all of these classic arcade games. And they have a lot of the same games. They have like the weird old Tron game and
oh sure,
Berserk and Elevator Action. I was not particularly good at video games, but I liked being around them and playing them for the 35 seconds that I can get through a game of Mr. Do.
I got pretty good at some of them, certainly not all of them. Actually, it's one of the things I bought a lot of at Walden Books was those little books they'd make, like How to Win at Pac-Man. All those little books like that, I bought them all and studied them.
Did they work?
They sort of did, yeah. I was like reading books and memorizing Pac-Man patterns. I was kind of a nerd.
Then you'd go to Dream Machine and show off your stuff.
Oh,
were
yeah.
You're like the Billy Mitchell of Lincoln, Rhode Island.
Yes, except even more obnoxious. That was me. Yeah, Dream Machine was a terrific arcade. The weird thing I remember about Dream Machine is that there would frequently, they'd be announcing that the champion checkers player would be making an appearance there, and you could play checkers against this champion checkers dude, which I never did, but I remember that he would regularly go there to play checkers.
Was this like in the world or in Lincoln, Rhode Island?
I don't know the extent of his checkers title. The title might have been exclusive to the Lincoln Mall. Maybe he was the best player at that mall. I don't know. But there was a checkers guy.
Like, if you beat him, did you become the new checkers guy? These are the questions I have.
I think he just held that title forever because I believe people would beat him. But then it was just, I beat the checkers champion. But then somehow that guy remained the champion.
Yeah.
Yeah, quite a scam going.
I think his photo was also at Ron's Spaghetti House.
That's right. That would have been the ultimate match, was Andre the Giant versus the checkers dude from the Dream Machine. Put that on pay-per-view.
Get those two together at the Lincoln Mall.
Also on the theme of comic books, the first event that you could just barely squint and somehow get away with calling a comics convention that I ever attended was at Lincoln Mall. They would occasionally announce a comics convention there, and it was not a convention, but it was just one of those little hallways. There would just be a bunch of guys would have card tables set up full of long boxes. And, you know, it was just guys selling old comics. That would happen there like every few months for a while in the 80s.
And was that where you first started getting back issues?
Yeah, that was one of the first times I was able to actually, you know, flip through boxes of old comics and actually buy some. And back then, like we're talking like mid 80s, like you could buy like Silver Age comics there cheap.
I did all of my back issue buying at places like Starship Excalibur, mm-hmm. which is probably like the worst possible way from a financial standpoint to do that, because I'm sure everything was marked up. But my only back issue interest as a kid was the X-Men.
Yep.
Like I was obsessed with the X-Men and needed to know everything that happened to them in the past.
Oh, yeah. And the only way to get that information was to find the old comic books.
And oh my God, the fact that now you can like open an app on your tablet and for $9 a month read every X-Men comic that's ever existed is boggling to me. Like we really do live in a golden age.
It's ridiculous. But yeah, even before I had access to Starship Excalibur or any comic shops or any real conventions, one of the very first places I ever got comics was just from a guy with a box of comics in the hallway at Lincoln Mall.
How did you do piecing together the DC multiverse? Did it make sense immediately, or were you kind of like...
Yeah, DC was pretty good about just in the middle of the story, or like in the back of the comic or whatever. Like I remember getting like one of those giant tabloid-sized Justice League comic book, and there was also like a big picture of the Justice Society on it, and it explained, here's the old group, and they're on a parallel Earth, Earth 2. And yeah, like, you know, editor Julia Schwartz or whoever would have a little note in the comics and they just kind of explain it to you. There's another Green Lantern who lives on a parallel Earth. And as kids, we were just like, okay, got it.
Yeah, I remember like talking about the theory of alternate realities to my parents, because which is something I learned from comic books, and them being like, where did you get this from? Is this that Dungeons and Dragons stuff again?
I mean, that's when they did the Crisis on Infinite Earths at DC in the mid 80s. And that was the company line was this multiverse thing, the parallel universes. It's too confusing to new readers. And all of us kids were like, no, it isn't. We got it. Dr. Fate lives on Earth too. We get that.
Yeah, because I think the sort of kids who get interested in comic books, part of the appeal is that it's a complex system.
Oh, yeah. You just want to devour it all.
Yeah. And you sort of like, the more you learn about the system, the more interested you are. Like I'm seeing it with one of my kids right now with baseball and sort of baseball stats and how he's like really clued into that. And he just wants to know it all. He's like, I got to know everything about baseball.
I'm like that with checkers.
Yeah. Well, naturally that's once you beat that dude and they put your picture and we're on Spaghetti House. But I think it's a feature, not a bug, for the sort of kids who read comic books and are like, I'm all in. And I think comic books are chasing this elusive, like, as long as I've been reading them, I'm chasing this elusive, like, casual reader
yeah.
who is going to be playing video games anyway. They're going to go to Dream Machine.
Yeah. It's new readers aren't going to understand this, or they're going to see the movie. Then they're going to open the comic book and they're not going to understand it.
And I think the sorts of people who are like going to be like, I'm all in are going to, that's going to be exciting to them.
Yeah. Cause those people that they're so worried about not understanding their comics, they're not going to read the comics. They're fine seeing the movies and they're done.
Yeah. So there you have it.
But on that subject, one of my earliest memories of Lincoln Mall, and this is related because it's a superhero themed thing, but I remember as a little kid, my mom taking me to Lincoln Mall to meet Spider-Man.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Did he play checkers?
Spider-Man was the checkers champion of Rhode Island. Yes.
Did you meet Spider-Man?
I met Spider-Man. Absolutely. Like, I remember getting like a black and white 8x10 autograph photo of Spider-Man. Yeah. Spider-Man appeared like in the middle, like near the fountain. I think they had a stage set up. And as my mom would tell the story in later years, she said, like, I was looking up, like up at the skylight overhead, that tall ceiling there, because I assumed Spider-Man was going to come swinging down. Whereas in reality, I'm pretty sure it was just, you know, guy came walking in.
Well, I hope Spider-Man found the people who stole my car stereo.
That's where they really needed Spider-Man was, yeah, patrolling the parking lot from that crime ring that you got all mixed up in.
There's a whole stereo crime ring. I never met Spider-Man. I only met Randy the Talking Reindeer at Lincoln Mall.
That's pretty good. I met Spider-Man. I believe I also met the Hulk there. Again, this is a very, very ancient memory of mine. But in my memory, the Hulk costume was like inflatable. It was like a guy wearing a bunch of like those things kids put on their arms when they get in a swimming pool. It was just a series of those things kind of covering a guy to approximate the Incredible Hulk.
Now, as a DC kid, were you like, where the heck is Superman?
Well, I did also see Batman and Robin there. And there was some sort of like a traveling stage show of Batman and Robin. Like they would set up sort of a set and they would put on a show of like Batman and Robin and I assume some criminals or whatever. So I saw a lot of superheroes at Lincoln Mall.
I never saw one superhero at Lincoln Mall. And
I saw four, not to brag.
I'm starting to feel like I missed the golden age of the Lincoln Mall.
In fact, I just learned this week, there's a guy named Brian Heiler. He does a website called Plaid Stallions, just like all this kind of retro stuff. He's actually a guest currently this week, I think, on TV Guidance Counselor. But he's put out some books on this sort of nerdy retro stuff that I've read. But he's working on a book about those sort of like character appearances, like public appearances by just somebody in a cheap superhero costume back in the 70s and 80s. He's working on a book about that.
Oh, nice. Every so often, our pal Chris Cummins on Sci-Fi Explosion will find like a video of one of those appearances and he'll play it on his Twitch stream. And it's magical.
And best part, though, the name of this book, Mall of Justice.
Oh, sign me up for that at Walden Books.
I am looking forward to that. Have we exhausted the subject of Lincoln Mall at this point? I think we hit everything on my notes.
Yeah, let's see. Lower Organs, Randy the Talking Reindeer, The Gap. I think so. Yeah.
Got it. I think we hit it all. I was working completely from memory. I didn't try to like Google Lincoln Mall or anything. So it's possible I'm completely forgetting stuff. But that was my kind of sorry early mall experience.
It was a place I have really fond memories of in ways I don't have fond memories of, say, Emerald Square.
Oh, yeah.
Or Providence Place, despite like seeing His Honor, the late Vincent C. Hansi at Providence Place.
Yeah, Lincoln Mall was really the only mall that was ever like my mall.
And it's interesting how malls have become like more of an outdoor phenomenon. Like there's a lot of outdoor malls where it's just a bunch of stores next to each other that are facing outward, like kind of big box stores.
Right. Yeah, that's not a mall.
Now, there's still a few kind of classic old school malls, I think.
Oh, sure.
Up here in Massachusetts, there's, you know, there's a Natick Collection. I live near the Burlington Mall, which I think is a pretty quality mall.
Yep, they're around. Are you a mall guy these days? Do you enjoy visiting a mall? Because I can't stand it.
I will go to a mall maybe once or twice a year.
Yeah.
There's like a GameStop at the Burlington Mall and my kids are into video games. So sure. We have done that.
Yeah. I really try to avoid them.
when I worked for a startup in Burlington, and I would sometimes get lunch at the food court at the Burlington Mall.
Nice.
I'd go to the Newbury Comics and I'd pick up my Wednesday comics for the week. And then I'd get myself some mediocre Indian food and read whatever was going on in the Secret Invasion at the time.
That's the dream. All right. Well, as we wrap up our mall talk, Kevin, can you, we mentioned your podcast sort of very briefly in passing, but I'm a regular listener. Please plug the podcast.
Thank you. Gleaming the Tube is the podcast I do with my friend Michael Brusso, who we forged our friendship at the Lincoln Mall, where we attempt to discuss every film that has a character riding a skateboard in some capacity over the course of the movie. The most recent episode that came out is about the Iranian skateboarding vampire movie, A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night. We have an episode coming out shortly, which is one of our kind of special off-topic episodes where we have a few guests talking about our favorite vampire movies. We've got our friend filmmaker Guy Benoit, who is another Lincoln Mall enthusiast, and I think Hanako Ricks, who is a person I was on a panel about vampire shows with at Dragon Con. Your Flopcast host, Kevin, has been on a few episodes of Gleaming the Tube around the Wonder Woman TV show and The Commitments. So
it was my great honor to appear on Gleaming the Tube.
Well, we've got to have you back at some point.
Anytime.
We need to find a film that is particularly of your ilk.
I did a little research on your behalf for Gleaming the Tube recently. I wasn't specifically researching for your show, but I was paying attention just in case it was something that, because I've occasionally tipped you off. If I happen to be watching a movie and there's skateboarding in it, I let you know.
Yes. I remember. I remember a New Year's Eve text from you about the Shaggy DA.
Lucky for you.
Having skateboarding in it. Lucky for me.
Lucky for you that I was spending my New Year's Eve watching the Shaggy Dog.
Which I was impressed by. I think at the time I was watching After the Thin Man on New Year's Eve. So both of us were
living it up,
really having a wild time of it.
But actually, just a couple of weeks ago, I was back in Woonsocket, Rhode Island at the Stadium Theater, movie theater of my youth. And I was there for a concert. I went to see John Cafferty and the Beaver Brown Band.
Rhode Island's own.
You have some connection to John Cafferty, I believe. We are speaking to Kevin Cafferty right now.
He's my dad's cousin. And when I was in third grade, I think I was in one of his music videos.
Yep, I've seen that video.
I play guitar like Chuck Berry in it. Just as good as Chuck Berry, I'd say. That was a very weird time as like a third grader to be on kind of a video shoot.
Absolutely. Right there in the heart of the video music era. Small Town Girl, the name of the song.
Small Town Girl's the name of the song. I remember there was a lot of sitting around this high school dance, and I sort of befriended kind of the older burnout kids as a third grader while waiting around, and it was interesting just watching them film all of that. And I think I'm in like one shot from the school dance wrapping cable.
Nice.
And then the next day we shot all the Chuck Berry duck walk stuff. The video was directed by my dad's other cousin, Danny.
Wow.
Who went on to become a producer on the Family Guy show.
Man, this was quite a family production.
Yes.
John Cafferty and the Beaver Brown Band, they did perform that song. They did your song, Small Town Girl, at the stadium concert that we just went to.
Well, they made a video for it that aired on MTV.
They sure did. As soon as the song started, I whispered to the mayor of Chickentown and said, "This is the song that Kevin's in the video for."
Oh, I should have gone and reenacted my bit.
They needed you on stage air guitaring.
The last time I saw John and the Beaver Brown Band was at the Ocean Mist in Rhode Island. And yep. You know, I know I am biased, but I do think they put on a very good show.
They put on a fantastic show. I've seen them a couple of times, and they're still a great live band. I recommend people, if you can see John Cafferty and the Beaver Brown Band, you should. They became very well known in the 80s for doing the music for Eddie and the Cruisers, the movie, as well as the sequel, Eddie and the Cruisers 2, Eddie Lives. Well, just this week, Kevin, I happened to rewatch both Eddie and the Cruisers movies. And I don't know if this will be a disappointment or a relief to you, but no skateboarding in either movie.
Oh, well, I'm not, I might have to recuse myself from reviewing them if there were, out of conflict of interest.
There's roller skating in both, but no skateboards.
Oh, well, when we do our spinoff show about roller skating, honestly, the spinoff show we want to do is about dream ballets, and we call it Dreaming the Cube.
That would be,
we talk about movies with dream ballets.
Remarkable. All right, I think we better wrap up the show. And Cornflake's not here to wrap up the show as she normally does. So I'm just going to, I can't do all that whole thing that she does at the end. So I'll just say flopcast.net is the website, and everything is there. You go to flopcast.net, you can link to Facebook, Instagram, Mastodon, all that fun stuff. And music for the Flopcast is provided by the Sponge Awareness Foundation, a band whose music was not available at Music and at the Lincoln Mall, as far as I know.
It was music and not the Sponge Awareness Foundation.
I don't think the dishwashers at Magic Menu were even harassing the line cooks by playing Sponge Awareness back in the day.
Probably not, although I should have been, because it seems like a bunch of people I knew in high school all had that Sponge Awareness cassette. So
we were massive in Rhode Island in the 90s.
I think for like nerdy band kids at the high school you went to,
yeah,
they were all like, yeah, Sponge Awareness. So
we had a very, very specific demographic. Absolutely. Kevin, thanks so much for filling in, special guest host, to look back at the Lincoln Mall. This was super fun for me.
Thank you for having me. This was super fun for me as well. I always enjoy a visit to Chickentown.
Well, we'll definitely have to have you back again, hopefully when Cornflake is here sometime. We'll see what we can do. Meanwhile, everybody, thanks for hanging out with us and going back to the mall with us, Robin Sparkles style. Meanwhile, everyone, of course, please be safe, be kind, be silly. And for episode 600, we'll see you next week.
Well, we'll be talking about the Emerald Square Mall.
Just a lot more excruciating mall talk, yeah, for episode 600. Yes, that's the plan.
Hi, I'm Gina Schock from the Go-Go's, fabulous drummer of the Go-Go's.
Hi, this is Tony Levin of King Crimson.
Hi, this is David Fischoff of the Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp.
Hi, this is Richard Evans. I am the author of Listening to the Music the Machines Make.
Hi, this is Teresa Kariakis, punk rock photographer.
Hi, I'm Tom Bojour, author of Nothing But a Good Time, and you are listening to Modern Musicology.
Modern Musicology.
Modern Musicology.
You're listening to Modern Musicology, so, you know, pay attention. You might learn something.
Kevin, this is the Flopcast secret after show. This is the secret part of the show. We played a promo. Everybody shut their podcast device off. There's nobody left. We can speak freely. It's a secret.
Yeah, the first time I guessed it on the Flopcast, I became aware of this secret after show. And I wanted to ask you if I could do something a little self-indulgent for the secret after show.
I think that could be arranged. What did you have in mind?
Sometimes my kids will listen to the Flopcast, this very show. They exclusively refer to it as Chicken Town. So to them, the name of the show is Chicken Town.
Yeah, they're not wrong.
Because the Flopcast is sort of PG rated, I can like listen to it in the car when we're driving around. So I wanted to say hi to them because so hello, Cleo. Hello, Alexander, and hello, Fletcher from Chicken Town. I will see you guys when I get back from this taping. The chickens all say hello.
We are speaking directly to you from right here in Chicken Town. This is like a romper room. Remember that the lady on Romper Room would directly address the kids in the audience?
Yeah, exactly. I remember at one point my daughter said to me, like, I know you think that you listen to Chicken Town because you think it's going to make me fall asleep in the car, but I think what they say is very interesting.
That might be the first time anyone's ever said that about the Flopcast. Thanks, Cleo.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping at the T Public store, which can all be found at esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.